Good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming. It's nice to see familiar faces. I would like to acknowledge my co-authors, which are Amy Groom and Cheyenne Jim, from the IHS Immunization Program. We're located in Albuquerque, New Mexico, but we are the National Immunization Program for the Indian Health Service. So I wanted to give you a background starting out, before I get into the details of the survey, of American Indians, Alaska Natives, and IHS in the United States. So according to the 2000 U.S. Census, people who stated that they were American Indian alone or in combination with other races accounted for about 1.5% of the U.S. population. The Indian Health Service System exists in about 34 states. It's the federal health care provider for our eligible American Indian Alaska Natives, and that eligibility is determined by whether they are a member of a federally recognized tribe, and there's over 560 of those throughout the country. Services are provided via IHS tribal or urban facilities. It's a difference in how they're administered and how they utilize their funds. And there's 1.4 American Indian people that access our IHS services or IHS funded services. So that would be in the IHS tribal or urban facilities. Just a snapshot for you of the Indian Health Service delivery area in the U.S. We are divided into 12 areas, is what we call them, and they are sometimes groupings of states, or in the case of the Tucson area or the Navajo area in the Southwest, more located towards a tribal service area for large tribes. We utilize the IHS Resource and Patient Management System. It's called RPMS. It is an electronic health record system that has been developed and supported by IHS for a number of years. It's used by ITU facilities throughout the country, and it includes an immunization component, which includes many of the features that you see here: tracking and forecasting, immunization coverage reports, reminder recall, due lists, and a doses administered report. One thing about the RPMS is it's used far and wide throughout our IHS. However, it is not a centralized EHR. It's actually localized to each individual facility who uses it. So one of the things that we really are interested in is participating in immunization registries so that we have a central repository for our immunization data. So we have the IHS Data Exchange Initiative, which is a bidirectional HL7 batch interface between RPMS and the state immunization information systems using our IHS Data Exchange software and an HTTPS bridge software. The Data Exchange software is an HL7 software, again, that operates in batch. It's developed for us by the same group that develops our RPMS immunization package and is designed to pull information from that immunization package, bundle it up, and send it over to the registry. And it can then receive messages back from the registry, which we can import directly into our patient files. The benefits of our interface is that it encourages IIS presentation or participation by our sites. And as an agency, the IHS supports immunization information system participation, and we actually have a policy memo that we have produced so that any of our facilities who question, you know, sharing data or is this okay under HIPAA, that kind of thing, can know that we as an agency do support, recommend, and encourage this. However, because the tribal entities are in a government-to-government relationship with the federal government and states, it is up to them and their choice whether or not they choose to participate. Most of them do. Another benefit of the interface is that it eliminates the need for our facility providers of doing double data entry into both the registry web interface and into RPMS. They can continue to use RPMS as their primary information source, which is good because RPMS is integrated into other patient packages throughout our system. So they not only use the immunization package, they use the lab package, they use the pharmacy package, and it allows that to, you know, remain continuous for them. So we can also pull, as I mentioned earlier, information directly from the IIS into individual RPMS records. And if you've ever talked to any of our providers who are able to do this, they really like the feature and they're very excited about it. And then the bridge software that I mentioned is a transport software, and it enables us to automate our data exchange so that there's not a manual upload every day. We can actually set the data exchange to run in the background to send and receive that information back from the state. So for the past 3 years, we've done an IIS survey, surveying our providers throughout the country to ask them about their provider participation in IIS, to identify perceived barriers to participation, and it kind of develops a tool for us for use in providing technical assistance and feedback to them as we ask them some pretty IHS-specific questions about which softwares they use and who they utilize for technical support, that kind of thing. And it also allows us to track ITU participation with IIS over time. We started it in 2008, so this is our third year. So it's, you know, it's sort of an ongoing effort. We actually have decided that we like doing it because it's providing us with some valuable information from our provider sites. And one of the most valuable things, which I won't be talking about, is that we've given them an open comment section, and we actually use that comment section to respond directly to people's individual concerns, whereas before we might not have heard those from the field. The survey in 2010 was 25 questions and a Likert scale. We distributed it via SurveyMonkey. Each area in IHS has an immunization coordinator, and we actually sent the survey link to them and had them distribute it to the individual immunization coordinators at each facility. The people that they distribute it to are the people who report to our immunization program through the IHS National Immunization Reporting System, which is a web-based reporting system that each facility uses to report immunization coverage on a quarterly basis, which we then use to create our aggregate quarterly reports at IHS National. And we also distributed it to tribal and urban sites who don't report to NERS. We realized after the first year of doing it that there are a number of facilities who, they may not report to our IHS facilities, but they do administer immunizations. And so we wanted to make sure that we captured their participation in IIS as well. Some of the limitations of this survey are that it doesn't represent results from all ITU sites. We only can tell you about what people told us. There's different samples. Not all of the same facilities reply from year to year, and the responses are self-reported. So what their sense of perhaps what's going on with their registry in their state is according to them. And these are clinical providers and not technical people, so they may not have a sense for some of the capabilities of registry or IHS interface. All right, so I put the responses from all 3 years up here for you, but I just wanted to show you to your right is the percent of response for 2010, which is, it looks like it's been going up every year. And you'll note that in 2009, our denominator was 259 as compared to this year, which was 232. And that's because we made a modification. When we distribute our survey to our coordinators to send out, we were counting last year all of the facilities that could possibly have replied. This year, we made sure just to limit it to the people who actually received the survey, whether they replied or not. So that was actually 232 persons had the survey in hand in order to respond. One thing that we enjoyed about it was that 90% of the people who responded this year were also respondents last year. So we felt pretty good about that. The people that were excluded in the overall responses are people who gave us incomplete replies, duplicates. Sometimes we had multiple facilities reply, or multiple persons within one facility reply. There were some non-immunizing facilities that made it in there somehow, and we took out their answers. And then again, the people who didn't receive the survey are not counted in the denominator. And so then we just looked at some basic information. Do you share information with your IIS? Do you participate in interface? And if so, is it one way or is it two way? And when I say interface, that is, do you use the IHS data exchange software? So in 2010, 84% of our respondents actually share information with the IIS, which is a greater number than in previous years. And 27% participate in a one-way interface, meaning that they use our software to send information via electronic export to their registry. And 14% operate a two-way interface. So the first two numbers have gone up a little bit. The two-way interface numbers stay about the same from year to year, we've noticed. So this is just another way of looking at those respondents who do send information to the IIS. How do they send it? We asked them whether they sent it hard copy, direct entry, which you can see is by far the most popular way of participating. Some people send via flat file, and some people send via interface. And the interface numbers are rising, but they are nothing compared to the direct data entry. So there's direct data entry and there's double data entry. So of all the respondents, over half of them enter their data directly into the IIS. Of those people who do that, there's also the number who enter their information both into RPMS and into the IIS, so they do double data entry, and that's 48% of all respondents. Well, then we went on to ask those particular people if entering immunizations into two systems is a barrier to their facility participating. And you'll notice that from last year to this year, the number who disagreed that that was true actually went up. So 34% of our respondents did not feel that it was a barrier to participating in an IIS. One reason that we think this might be true is that, you know, we have some people who are IIS users who have been doing double data entry for a number of years, even before there was an IHS interface, and they may be used to it. So they're, you know, they go ahead and they do it regardless of whether or not there's the possibility for the interface. There's also some states who they're in a state where they are not able to do an interface with the IIS for, you know, various reasons, and they see the worth of participating in an IIS, so they're going to do it no matter what. What I did find interesting, though, is of those 21 people who disagreed that it was true, eight of them provided comments, and they said, you know, even though we do this, we disagree that it's a barrier, but we still want a two-way interface. So I found that interesting. Another thing that we'd like to look at with regard to this is what size of the facility were the people who said that they disagreed, because some of our larger facilities, I noticed, were in the group that agreed that it was a barrier. And for people who have thousands of patients a day, they simply cannot do the direct data entry and the double data entry, whereas our, you know, we have facilities that see maybe 10 to 20 patients where it might not be as much of a barrier for them. And we looked at getting information back from the IIS, and 129 people told us about this, and by and large, most of them receive information back from the IIS by using the lookup capability, and a smaller number from the BYIM interface. We just asked them generally about their perceptions of IIS and participation, and you'll see that overwhelmingly people agreed with the following statements: that there was interest in participating in an IIS, that they felt that it was important. 97% of people felt that the lookup capability was useful, and 94% of people also felt that a two-way interface would be useful for them. This slide is actually not from the survey. This is from a informational presentation that I provided to the IHS IT director with regard to meaningful use. Her question to us was, and I thought it would be interesting for you, is there's information that's provided in a survey about what the providers think, but we also want to know what we're actually doing. So this is a map of the United States showing you what IHS data exchange looks like as of right now in the US. So you'll see that there's some slides, states in sort of a teal blue, Washington, Utah, Arizona, et cetera, going to the east. And those are all states where we engage in a two-way interface using our IHS data exchange software with the state immunization information system. You'll see that Maine and South Dakota sort of have a little bit of shading, and that's because we're actually building those interfaces and in a testing phase with both of those states right now, and we just have not gone into production. And then you'll see the states that are, well, that interesting color came out kind of a puce green, didn't it? It was prettier on my slide at home. But the green states, Alaska, Oregon, Montana, and Oklahoma, all engage in a one-way data exchange with IHS at this time. Total, out of 200-plus facilities in the United States, we have 65 states that are engaged in a two-way or one-way interface with an IIS right now. Those are the numbers per state, and I'm sure there's people in here from those states. If you want to know more information afterward, I'm happy to answer your questions. But why are there 22 states that don't have an interface? Well, you'll see that there's the states in white, and the states in white are actually, they don't have tribes, so they're not states that we would traditionally work with. But of the remainder, there's 22 states that are sort of a light blue color, and those are the ones that the IHS IT director, that's what she wanted to know from me. Cecile, why are we not doing data exchange in these 22 states? So I've developed this map, and I'm sharing it with you. So moving on to interface feasibility, and well, it's kind of going off the top there, but where I got the information to sort of fill out this slide was from the 2008 Immunization Information System Annual Report from CDC. And I supplement it with what I know or who I know to be working with or conversations that I've had with state partners. So you'll see that of the states that are remaining, the 22, I've changed the colors around somewhat. So you have some orange states, and those are states that are, according to the 2008 ISR, are HL7 capable states, Idaho, Kansas, Louisiana, Rhode Island, New York, and North Carolina. And then there are also some states that are in yellow, and these states are also HL7 states, but we think there may be potential issues with the transport layer, which may prohibit us from doing our particular interface with them using the software that we use. And some of them use FinMS, some of them do transport via secure FTP or FTP, and so that's something we've yet to negotiate. So it's an interesting thing because, as you all know, HL7 is the standard, and so, you know, if we come to the table with HL7, we'd like to be able to, you know, plug and play, but that doesn't always happen, and something to be considered additionally is what sort of transport layer does an IIS use, and is that compatible with what the provider's systems are also using? And then we asked them a final question about H1N1 reporting in the survey, and we thought we would just provide you with that information as well. 95% of the people who responded actually answered the question of whether they reported to H1N1 vaccinations to the state. 52% of those people entered the information directly into their IIS web interface. 26% completed a state reporting form and either faxed or mailed that in. I'm sure they faxed it. And 13% of people reported using our BYIM software to report immunizations to the state. And 56% of people overall found that that reporting process was efficient. So those of you in the states who worked with them on that, they overall did like that. Conclusions. Well, most of our sites send information to the IIS, and direct data entry is the method most frequently used. In 2010, 91% of those doing direct data entry also performed double data entry. And most sites use an IIS lookup capability. And this number has increased from 2008 to 2010. And regardless of the method of participation, 99% of the respondents feel that lookup is useful. So they very much appreciate that, having that. And with regard to interfaces, two-way interfaces account for only about 14% of all participation, but 94% of our respondents feel that one would be useful. And of 11 potential interfaces that we have in the United States, and this is just based off of whether or not the registry can accept HL7 messages and in some cases send it back, five have potential transport issues that we're going to have to look into further before we can engage in implementing an interface. And HL7 is only one factor in an interface implementation, and the other one is transport. It's an important consideration and has not yet been addressed by a standard. And again, I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues who worked with me on this and our area immunization coordinators who distributed this in the field. Thank you.
Okay, are there any questions for Cecile?
Okay. Hi, Cecile. It was nice to see sort of the summary and compilation of where we are nationally with those interfaces. You may have answered this, but what level of personnel actually completed the surveys and answered the questions?
Oh, okay. No, you know, I'm not sure if I did go into this. We distributed this to our clinical providers who would actually be running the HL7 software. That would be nurses, immunization coordinators at the sites. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we also have a number of IT site persons that are involved in our interface, but we did not choose to send this to them because we sort of wanted to know from the clinical perspective, what is your level of participation?
Okay, so that should be pretty accurate. And the reason I ask that is that we do find, we believe there is a disconnect in some cases between what administrators know is being done or think is being done and what the issues are versus those that are actually using the system.
And agreed. And in fact, the first year that we distributed the survey, we really wanted to get into the techie questions and ask them, you know, what version are you using, what sort of platform are you using, this kind of stuff. And we were getting a lot of incomplete responses. And so we realized, you know, if we're going to send this to our providers who use the software and evaluate immunization information, we need to make sure that this is more of a survey for them.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cecile, you know in California we have some exchanges going on with the entities using the next gen product. Can you speak to that at all? Because that seems to be, I realize that you're dealing with RPMS, yet you have these entities using this adapted next-gen product. How prevalent is that? What's the trend with that? Where do they fit in, to the picture once they switch over, to next-gen?
Okay, great, thank you. For background, for those of you who may not know, RPMS is by and large what's used throughout ITU facilities in the United States. However, tribal entities can use their healthcare dollars allocated by the government any way that they'd like, and some of them choose to use a software called NextGen as their site EMR. And IHS supports RPMS, and everything that we develop goes towards support of RPMS, and IHS does not provide any direct support for the NextGen product. So it's unfortunate when some of the people that responded to this survey, we're not able to offer our interface to, but they are able to interface using NextGen. I'm aware that NextGen does provide an interface package or module to their software, but I'm not really sure about that. We are happy to share information with NextGen sites about what we feel is important to have in place if they'd like to interface, and provide them informational support in that way. However, formally as an agency, we don't provide NextGen support. And I think there's about 20, 25 sites nationwide that do utilize NextGen, and some of the current RPMS users are transitioning over to that.
I'm Melanie Mazoon. I'm from Texas, and unfortunately, Texas is not HL7 compliant, so I'm not sure what transport issues mean. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about systems that are HL7 compliant. And so since we're working on improving our registry, I'd kind of like to know what are transport issues. Can you elaborate a little bit?
Sure, but Nathan, you might have to help me. Being a program person, I'm less of a technical person, although I'll tell you, I'm really learning quickly. So HL7 is the language that the message is transported in. So, it's sort of like if you write a letter, are you writing your letter in English or in French? And HL7 is the language. How you convey that letter once you've stuck it in the envelope to the person you want to get it to is your transport. So are you sending it on an HTTPS, a secure HTTP connection, or are you putting it on, an FTP server for someone to pick up? Or, that's sort of the transport issue. So for us, the first condition of using the RPMS interface software is that you are an RPMS user. So a NextGen site, for instance, couldn't use it. The second condition would be, is the receiving entity able to accept the HL7 message that is the language that our software processes the information in? And then the third thing is if we want to automate our interface and make it go over sort of in the background, the receiving entity must be able to receive the message via secure HTTP. Does that help? Okay.
Did I do good?
All right.
Any other questions? All right. Well, partnership works, because I see a lot of familiar faces that stuck with me to the last presentation in the conference, so thank you for being here.